I'm Serena Abuljood. On Friday, September 6, protester Samar Al-Khdour was issued a warrant for her arrest after yelling at Federal Immigration Minister Mark Miller when she saw him leave his office. Al-Khdour refused the conditions of her arrest, turned herself in on Monday, and appeared in court on Tuesday. She, along with two other protesters, were arrested and charged with criminal harassment as well as mischief. Al-Khdour had been organizing regular sit-ins outside of Miller's office in Verdun since March, calling on the federal government to improve its visa program for family members of Canadian Palestinians who are still in Gaza. In January 2024, Al-Khdour's 13-year-old daughter, Jenna, who suffered from cerebral palsy and was trapped in Gaza, received the green light from the Canadian government to join her family in Quebec, 2 weeks after she died of malnutrition caused by Israel's siege on Gaza. Al-Khdour agreed to stay 50 meters away from Miller and his staff and to refrain from speaking publicly about the case. However, she said she will continue to demonstrate outside his office. On Thursday, September 12, Concordia and McGill students rallied in front of McGill's Arts Building, calling on both universities' administrations to divest from companies with ties to Israel. Students marched from McGill to Concordia, stopping inside the EV building first, then making their way to the Hall Building, where they formed an occupation. Protesters hung banners that said, "You repress the students, this is how we respond, long live the student intifada." The cops were called on campus as soon as protesters went up the floors. They finished off outside Hall and dispersed in pairs. On Sunday, citizens and rights group assembled outside the Jewish General Hospital to protest against Bill 96. This comes after a recent government directive that aimed to control the use of languages other than French in healthcare settings. The directive stated that only individuals with English language education certificates could communicate exclusively in English with the healthcare and social services system. This also applies to those who only spoke English with healthcare facilities prior to May 13, 2021. The backlash caused by this directive led to a new improvement. Last Thursday, Quebec's National Assembly passed a new motion affirming that Anglophones won't need the certificate to get treated in their mother tongue. That being said, the original directive will remain in force until a new one is rewritten. Protesters hope it will be dropped entirely. For more, follow CJLO News on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live here on the Tommy John Show on a wet and rainy Monday, September 23rd. I am your host, Tommy Lane, and this is our first time at 1 o'clock. Yes, this is our new time slot. If you've listened to the show before, it usually took place from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern on CJLO 1690 a.m. Now, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern on CJLO 1690 a.m. It's going to take me a little bit of time to get that right, but feels good. New time slot, prime time slot, and I can't wait for this new time slot. I think it's going to be great, and we get to get on the air sooner. You know, we had a lot of stuff happen on the weekend. We get to get on the airways much sooner. So we have a whole bunch to get into. We have a huge week coming up. We have the last 2 weeks of Major League Baseball, NFL. We're already into week four after tonight, which is crazy. We got the President's Cup just a few kilometers away at Royal Montreal. starting Thursday. The players are already there now, like Scottie Scheffler and others. Cannot wait for that. We'll get into that over the show. We had the Laver Cup over the weekend. And not to mention huge fights in the world of boxing. We will get into all of it over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. But we will start off like we always do. A quick recap in the past week. And it would be foolish for us to not start with the National Football League. And what a week we had. We start off Thursday with my New England Patriots going on the road and getting hammered by the New York Jets. Aaron Rodgers looked like his old self. The Achilles looked fully healed on Thursday. He was sensational. He was 27 of 35, 281 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jacoby Brissett, I mean, he was getting hit like I've never seen a quarterback get hit before. He was 12 of 18 for 98 yards. We saw a glimpse of Drake May for the last 4 minutes. He saw some flashes. He got hit. He took, I think, 2 or 3 sacks. But he had a very nice throw over the middle to Douglas. So I don't know when they're going to put him out there. They have San Francisco next week. We'll see. But we Pats fans got a glimpse of the future with Drake May going in there with, let's say, 4 minutes left in the game. So the Jets are 2-1 right now and are awaiting the result from the Bills game tonight to see if they're first or second in the AFC East. The New York Giants got their season back on track with a huge win in Cleveland, 21-15 over the Browns. Daniel Jones, pretty efficient game by his standards, 24-34, 236, 2 touchdowns. More importantly, a huge game for rookie sensation Malik Nabers, the number 6 overall pick in the draft, was sensational. 8 catches, 78 yards, and those 2 huge touchdowns. Devin Singletary, he's doing great job, doing a phenomenal job in replacement of Saquon Barkley. He had another 65 yards and a touchdown. Not a good day for Deshaun Watson. Didn't even throw for 100 yards. Amari Cooper had a big day, though, with 2 touchdowns. The Giants front seven, though, they were causing Deshaun Watson havoc the whole afternoon. And the Giants play Thursday at Dallas. We'll see. That front seven is no joke. If they can get pressure to Dak, if they can run the football on Dallas, because everyone's running the football on Dallas, if they can do that consistently, watch out. Watch out. I'm not saying the Giants are going to go win the Super Bowl or something, but they found their DNA. We're going to run the ball, play action the neighbors, and we're going to play stellar defense. And that seems to be a good formula, similar to the Patriots. The Philadelphia Eagles had a huge bounce back win with a 15-12 victory over the New Orleans Saints. I mean, Jalen Hurts, not his best game by any means. Had a boneheaded interception early on, but he rebounded nicely. Saquon Barkley had a monster afternoon, 147 yards on the ground with 2 touchdowns. Dallas Goedert, 10 catches, 170 yards for him. And too bad he was on the bench from fantasy for me this week. I could have used that. Derek Carr, not his best performance, only 142 yards. Alvin Kamara, 87 yards. Chris Olave, though, establishing himself as one of the better receivers in the league. He had 86 yards and a touchdown in the loss. They have Atlanta next week. That is New Orleans. The Eagles have a very important game coming up at Tampa Bay. Whoa, this game was a surprise. The Minnesota Vikings 34-7 over the Houston Texans. I think we got to stop calling the Minnesota Vikings pretenders. They are 3-0 and they have destroyed teams. And now it is the Houston Texans who are their newest victim. They looked stellar. Sam Darnold looked like the number 3 overall pick that he was a few years ago. He looked like USC Sam Darnold since coming to Minnesota under Kevin O'Connell. He had 4 more passing touchdowns. Justin Jefferson had 81 yards and a touchdown. And Aaron Jones over 100 yards on the ground. Just a stellar, stellar day by the Minnesota Vikings, who are 3-0. Leading the way in the NFC North. They got a big game at Green Bay next Sunday. And maybe they won't rush Jordan Love back in Green Bay, because Malik Willis, as I've been his biggest critic, he's been stellar so far since playing for the Packers. He had 202 yards and a touchdown. Not to mention he was running the ball great as well. 73 yards on the ground. I mean, he's been sensational. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch. He's playing much better than people thought. The Titans fall to 0-3. Will Levis just not good at all. At all. Just costly. He threw a pick six to Jaire Alexander on a boneheaded throw. He's just not making good decisions right now. And the Titans are in a deep hole at 0-3. But that loss by Houston did definitely help. That definitely helped. Anthony Richardson and the Colts win a... I don't know what you want to call it. Just an up and down weird affair. He was only at 10 completions and 2 interceptions. He has not played well at all this year, but the Colts defense stepped up. Jonathan Taylor stepped up, over 110 yards on the ground, 2 touchdowns. Caleb Williams, just an up and down day for him. 363 yards passing, 2 touchdowns. He did have the 2 picks, but albeit I thought one of them wasn't his fault. I thought Odunze should have caught one of them. Big day for him, though. 6 catches, 112 yards, and a touchdown from Odunze. But, you know, the Bears, their defense is legit. Kept them in the game when they weren't scoring. Same thing last week when they played Houston. But Caleb Williams seems to be getting better. He threw the ball 50 times, so he's getting his reps in. But the O-line held a bit better than last week. But they got their hands full with the Rams next week, who pulled off a shocking win over the San Francisco 49ers, 27-24. They were down by 10 in that fourth quarter, and 13 unanswered points later. And the LA Rams with a surprising win over the San Francisco 49ers. A huge day for Juwan Jennings for San Francisco, though. 175 yards, 3 touchdowns. Brock Purdy, 292 yards, 3 touchdowns. Still wasn't enough to get the job done. And now San Francisco, you like to think they'd bounce back against New England. But you look at their schedule coming up. They got big division games after that with Arizona and Seattle. Then they got Kansas City, Dallas, Tampa. So this is they got to get on a winning streak, those next three. They got to beat New England. You got to beat Arizona, and you definitely got to beat Seattle, who's leading the way in the NFC West, who just seem to be rattling off wins right now. It's not pretty, but the Dolphins are fighting with one hand behind their back right now. Skylar Thompson also got injured in the game as well, but he wasn't doing anything special. Geno Smith wasn't great either. He had 2 interceptions, but doesn't matter. They are 3-0 and are cruising right now. The Seattle Seahawks. They got Detroit next Monday. That will be a huge test for them to see where Seattle actually are. Speaking of the Detroit Lions, they had a much needed victory after that blown game against Tampa Bay last week. 20-13 over Arizona. A big game for David Montgomery, over 100 yards on the ground and a touchdown. We have to discuss that Sunday night football game. The Atlanta Falcons with several chances to take down the Chiefs, and it just didn't go their way. There was that missed pass interference call in the end zone on Kyle Pitts. They could have settled for 3 to make it a 2-point game. They didn't. They went for it, didn't get it. Then they get the ball back, driving on Kansas City, have a 4th and inches, and they don't get it. And the Chiefs hold on to win 22-17. Not the best game by Mahomes by any means. He has not played that well so far this year. But the Chiefs, we've seen it countless times. They start off slow, and then by playoff time, they just slowly pick it up and pick it up. But Atlanta, I mean, they can play. If they can play with Kansas City like they did, there's no reason why they shouldn't be a contender in the NFC. If Kirk Cousins plays just a little bit higher standards, which I think he will, I mean, he's still coming off that Achilles injury. I think as the season goes on, he will get better and better. But that's a game you should have had. If you take the 2 field goals, you win that game. Or if they, obviously, they call the pass interference in the end zone, they probably win the game, but still. The Baltimore Ravens, 28-25 over the Dallas Cowboys. Almost a blown game by Baltimore. They let Dallas creep all the way back, but they hold on for their first win of the year. They are at 1-2. The Pittsburgh Steelers remain undefeated with a 20-10 victory over the Chargers. Justin Herbert getting hurt in the game, which is not a good sign, but people think he's going to play next week against Kansas City. He's nothing that serious. So that's a huge break for the Chargers. The Denver Broncos get their first win of the year, and Bo Nix is the first win of his career as they take down the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 26-7. Last thing we have to get into, the Carolina Panthers bench Bryce Young. We were on air when it happened. When they benched Bryce Young, they put in Andy Dalton, and he looked like Cincinnati Andy Dalton. 319 yards, 3 touchdowns. As the Carolina Panthers take down the Raiders 36-22. Big game for Deontay Johnson. 8 catches, 122 yards, and a touchdown. We got two games tonight, two Monday nighters to look forward to. We got Trevor Lawrence and the Jags at Buffalo to take on Josh Allen and the Bills. And we got the battle of the last two LSU Heisman-winning quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels at Joe Burrow, as the Commanders take on the Cincinnati Bengals. That should be a great game. Looking forward to it. And then for next week, we got a big one with, on Thursday, Dallas and New York to see who can go to 500 in that division. And then notable games next week, obviously, you have New Orleans and Atlanta, which is a big one for both teams. The Sunday Nighter is important, too. You got Buffalo and Baltimore. And we got two Monday night games as well next week. You got the Dolphins and the Titans, and you got the Seahawks and the Lions. So two Monday Nighters, 2 weeks in a row. We love hearing that. We absolutely love hearing that. The President's Cup takes place this week in Montreal at Royal Montreal Golf Club, and it's the U.S. looking to just continue, just looking to dominate this tournament, make it the, just automatic. I mean, it's been like that for, what, since 98, I think the Internationals won at Royal Melbourne or something around there. It's been a long time. And the U.S. look to continue their dominance, and it's tees off Thursday. And I cannot wait. You look at the U.S. team captained by Jim Furyk, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Wyndham Clark, Patrick Cantlay, Sahith Fagala, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns, Tony Finau, Brian Harman, Max Homa, Russell Henley make up the U.S. squad. If you look at the internationals, captained by Mike Weir, Hideki Matsuyama, Sungjae Im, Adam Scott, Tom Kim, Jason Day, Ben Young Hang, Christian Bezuidenhout, Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes, Siwoo Kim, Minwoo Lee, Taylor Pendrith make up the internationals. That tees off this Thursday at Royal Montreal, and I cannot wait for that. Formula One returned over the weekend, and Lando Norris gets another win for McLaren. He takes first place. Max Verstappen from Red Bull second. Oscar Piastri from McLaren third. That rounds up the podium, and McLaren just extending their lead atop the Constructors' Championship. Max Verstappen, though, still leading the way in the Drivers' Championship. We head to Major League Baseball, and it's heating up. We don't got many games left, but we got a tight race for that final wild card spot. The Royals and the Tigers both tied for that last wild card spot, with Minnesota a game back, Seattle 2 games back, and the Red Sox and the Rays both at 4 games back. Tampa and Boston maybe a bit too far back, but still, you never know. Yet to the National League, the Mets have a 2-game advantage over the Braves. The Diamondbacks as well tied on that number. They have not played well as of late. The San Diego Padres seem to be safely in. So if we look, the Yankees leading the way in the East. The Cleveland Guardians leading the way in the Central, and the Astros chilling atop of the Western Conference, or division, I should say. The National League, the Dodgers leading the way in the West, the Phillies leading the way in the East, and the Milwaukee Brewers picked up the division crown over the weekend. They are the third seed right now, and I can't wait. We got 2 big weeks of baseball left. Should be good. Preseason hockey already started, and we have some news to talk about during the show about what we expect for the Canadians. They have their first preseason game tonight as they host the Philadelphia Flyers at the Bell Center. So we're going to get into a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what the hell happened to Atlanta last night on Sunday Night Football, as well as talk about some of the college football storylines heading into week number 5 now in college football. We're flying in college football. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We're back after this quick word from our sponsors.
The Pop Montreal International Music Festival is back from September 25th to the 29th. You won't want to miss the best upcoming artists from at home and abroad. All across the Mile End, you can check out local CJLO favorites such as Amory, Dresser, Jane Penny, Knitting, Laughing, Night Lunch, Ribbon Skirt, Eve Jarvis, Pool Girl, and much more. Plus, you won't want to miss legendary international acts such as Beverly Glenn Copeland, Spirit of the Beehive, Manny Fresh, and the list goes on. There's something for everyone, so make sure to also check out Puss Pop, Film Pop, and Kids Pop as well. Check out the full lineup at popmontreal.com. Tickets are on sale now.
Mwahaha. I found the perfect time for evil. Mondays at noon.
Oh, no, you don't.
What?
That time is reserved for the angelic tracks of Indie Past.
No!
Ha! I showed him. Mondays at noon are safe with REVC. Only on CJLO 1690 AM.
Born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road and hanging by a song. But the string's already broken and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast and it don't last for long. But the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire. Softer than a lullaby, Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado,
Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
Back here in the Tommy John Show. The reason for that song selection is because we have to get into what happened with Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes in a ridiculous week of college football. Just, oh. This is why people love college football. I mean, you get the crazy things you might not get in the NFL. But, oh my God, we have to get into it. So, Deion Sanders and Colorado, they're 2-1 right now without playing any conference games. They were before the game. They were 2-1, haven't played any conference games. They get Baylor, who's been a good program as of late. They won the Big 12 a few years ago. So, this is a huge game for Colorado. They had their chances early on, trying to get into the game. They had the lead first, then Colorado and Baylor comes back, and then Baylor's just kind of controlling the game, and Baylor had a chance to go up two scores. The kicker misses a field goal. All right, Colorado has a chance to tie this game. There is, I don't know how many seconds left the game, I think 11 seconds or so. Second and 10, they're at the 40, I think 3-yard line, and they need a Hail Mary to tie the game, and this is what happens.
On a second and 10. Clock inside 10 seconds. Sanders takes his shot here toward the end zone. It is dropped! Shepard would have had a touchdown!
Wow. 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 Caden Jenkins. Right there, number 8 in coverage. You see him going up and challenging for it. You see the student section in the background.
So I was watching that game live, and when he dropped the ball, I'm like, you got to be kidding. Colorado down 7, but thank God he dropped the ball with time left on the clock. But it was deflating. Everyone knows the game's over. They had a chance to tie the game, once in a generation type of a throw and play, and he dropped it. So there's 2 seconds left. I mean, I might as well watch the end, just see the last play. And can Shedeur Sanders just get it into the end zone and see what happens? And then this happens.
And all rushing from one side.
The Big 12 opener comes down to this play. Sanders gets the feet set toward the end zone.
Thank you.
The first look in the stadium they just showed was this look right here. We'll check the ball. That looks like firm control from the two angles that we've seen. Just a great effort again by LaJonte Wester, by Shedeur Sanders to even create under duress to give his guy a chance to see if this ball splits the uprights at all. Looks to me like his elbows are together. And that, to me, is a catch.
For the view, going on the field of a touchdown, stands.
So that happened, and I was officially done. That is so crazy. They drop one Hail Mary. Next play, Shedeur Sanders to Wester. They complete another one. And then they go to overtime, and I was so drained watching this game, albeit I was also flicking back and forth. They had Oklahoma-Tennessee, and Tennessee won that game. And Boston College, I guess, won a dramatic one. But there wasn't, I mean, Arch Manning. They were lighting up UL Monroe. There's nothing really huge going on. And even the big games were blowouts. So all my attention's focused on this Baylor-Colorado game. I was into it, rooting for Deion, wanting Colorado to do well. And the beauty of sports, you think your team's done, and then you get a glimmer of hope when the ball's in the air and it hits the guy in the hands and he drops it, then all your hope's gone. To immediately have it turn around again was just staggering. It was unbelievable, truly unbelievable. Then it goes to overtime. Colorado scores first possession, no problem. And then, of course, it's Travis Hunter forces a fumble against Baylor through the end zone to win the game. And Colorado wins and are now 3-1 and 1-0 in the Big Ten. And trust me, I know they beat TCU last year. This is the biggest win of the Deion Sanders era. Not close. People were saying, oh, they can't win a big game. You mean he beats up on the smaller schools like Colorado State, beats up on North Dakota State, but loses to Nebraska. He's going to lose to Baylor. He doesn't beat the big schools. Now, he finally, with the target on his back, with people know what their past have been. I mean, when he was the coach against TCU last year, I mean, no one knew what we were going to get. And we got fireworks, and they beat TCU. But since Deion has been at Colorado, the pressure's never been higher. Beginning of last year, there's not really that much pressure. It's your first game as the head coach. Yeah, we'll see what happens. There was a whole bunch of pressure on Deion in Colorado. Like, monumental. If they lose that game, you're 0-1 in the Big 12. New conference, can't even win at home. You know what people are going to say? You have the two best players in the country. You can't win the game. And just that Hail Mary completion and that fumble forced in overtime. And we're sitting here on a Monday, and Colorado's 3-1, 1-0 in the Big 12, with UCF on the weekend. If they win that one, they're 4-1 and 2-0 in the conference, and they're looking in great shape. Now, in the new college football playoff, if you win the conference, you get a spot in the playoff. And remember, this team 2 years ago, before they hired Deion Sanders, were 1-11, irrelevant, no one cared. And now students are packing out the stadium. They're charging the field. They're winning Big 12 football games. It's unbelievable the turnaround they had. They should win more than 4 games this year. If they win 6-7 games this year, it's a huge success. Huge success. He is making Colorado relevant. I assume the ratings for this game are going to be through the roof because the Tennessee game was going nowhere against Oklahoma. That quarterback stunk. Arnold, oh my God, we'll get into that. Stunk. Mean, and then you had Arch Manning, who was just demolishing UL Monroe. And I guess Michigan State, Boston College, but that's on the ACC network. Don't really give the rip about that. Gave a rip about that. This was the game people were watching. Fox, national television, close game, Deion's first game in the Big 12. Let's see what happens. And that happens. Absolute mayhem. Crazy. Here is Deion Sanders following the Buffalo's incredible win against Baylor Saturday.
Win. Great. Great. Win. Young men were resilient. They never gave up. They never surrendered. the coaches were still inspired. I mean, all the way to the end, they were still calling and devising things. And once we scored, we was already thinking, okay, we want to defer if we win because we want to put their defense out first, our defense out first. But they wanted to toss, and it went from there. I don't like how it played out, but I love the results. I think we're so much better than what we're showing you at times. We keep showing you glimpses of running game. We show you glimpses of us playing, like, I mean, hard-nosed, tough football defensively. We show you we can throw the ball all around, and then we just stall for a series of two and surrender something foolishly. But
aujourd'hui,
that is Coach Deion Sanders following the team's huge win against Baylor over the weekend. And what this will do for the program, I think it'll do a lot. I think it will do a whole lot because Colorado needed a win at this point in the season. Their season could have went in two ways. You lose this game, you get behind the eight ball in the Big 12, and you're really going nowhere, and you know your two best players are leaving at the end of the year. This could have been very ugly for Colorado. You lose this game at home, Baylor. All the newspapers, all the media outlets are going to say, oh, Deion, you just can't win the big games. You got Baylor at home. That's a game you should win. And he fell just short. That's what they were going to write. Instead, today, people are talking about how entertaining Colorado is, and B, how they're becoming a factor in the Big 12. Are they as good as Utah? Are they good as Oklahoma State? No. I don't think so. But to say they can't maybe make a run and make things interesting in the Big 12, make a bowl game this year, absolutely they can. Absolutely they can. No question. And people can knock Colorado all they want. Oh, they just won headlines. Oh, Deion just doing it for himself. You know, they make college football entertaining, and they made Colorado relevant again. No one gave a rip about Colorado football. No one. They were 1-11. Awful. Had to clean out the whole coaching staff. No one going to games. I knew a few people went to Colorado Boulder. University of Colorado Boulder. I knew people. No one gave a rip about the pro college football program. No one. Now, they must be one of the most followed on social media. People are tuning into their games, and they're exciting. Shador is one of the two to three best quarterbacks in the nation. Travis Hunter is the best player in the nation. You can make an argument he's the best receiver. You can make an argument he's the best DB. He's both. He's going to be a top three pick in the draft, no question. Not to mention they have other great receivers there too. They play high-flying, fast offense. They score points, and Colorado is must-see TV, win or lose. And 2 years ago, that was not the case. At all. Not at all. And I was on the edge of my seat. I've watched all the NFL games this weekend. Watched all the college games Saturday. I watched unfortunately watched the Patriots game Thursday. Saw the Nebraska-Illinois game on Friday night. So I watch football Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Going to watch it tonight. I will bet I will not be as entertained. Those two Monday night games can't be as good as that Colorado game was on Saturday, entertainment-wise. None of the other college games were as good as that, entertainment-wise. And none of the NFL games were as good as that, entertainment-wise. By a mile, if you ask, what was the most entertaining game you watched this weekend, Tommy, college or pro? It was, without question, Colorado-Baylor. Not even close. Even when they go for it, the drive earlier, fourth and short, they don't get it. The defense haven't been holding them all game. They held them. Then you're praying that the kicker misses. He misses. Then Shador gets the ball with like 4 minutes left. They're just slowly going down the field. Then they got a first down. I think the clock's going to stop. The refs mess it up. More time bleeds off the clock. You're so invested in the game, you're going nuts. Then you think you have a Hail Mary for a touchdown. The guy drops it. Then the next play, they complete the Hail Mary. And then there's the nerves of, oh, crap, it's rain, torrential downpour, college kicker. Maybe he misses the extra point, which we've seen a lot. He makes the extra point. Then we're going to overtime. And then you have Shedeur Sanders basically pushing his running back into the end zone in the overtime. And then when you think Baylor's going to tie it and maybe go for two and win the game, Travis Hunter forces a fumble on the 1 yard line for a touchback. And Colorado wins. There was no game close to that. I know the Illinois game against Nebraska went to overtime. That was so entertaining. I guess Boston College scoring on the last drive against Michigan State. But it wasn't the same level as this. This is prime time, everyone watching, because the Oklahoma-Tennessee game was a tough watch. Everyone who watches college football was watching Baylor-Colorado. And everyone was on the edge of their seats. Trust me. Even Baylor fans. I know they're heartbroken this week, but that to say that was not an entertaining football game or one of the most entertaining football games I've seen in recent times, that would be a lie. It was unbelievable, must-see TV, and that's Colorado. And I'll be watching them when they play UCF. And now we're into the good part of their schedule. They have their Big 12 portion of the schedule. There's no more Colorado States. There's no more North Dakota States on this schedule for Colorado. It is big-time college football programs. When the Pac-12 went away, vanished, they joined the Big 12, and they said, we're ready to play some football. And, man, their schedule is a tough one. I mean, you look at it. UCF, maybe they win that game. Then you got Kansas State, Arizona, Cincinnati, Texas Tech, Utah, Kansas, Oklahoma State. They're playing the big programs now. Kansas State ranked 13th. That was another surprise. When I watched some of that BYU game, they were awful. Awful. Unwatchable, basically. They couldn't do anything. I mean, they were up, 6-0? And then it was a tidal wave BYU. I've never seen anything like that. It was like 31 points in 5 minutes of game time. It was crazy. We'll get into that later. But Colorado, I just wanted to talk about, people got to stop hating on Deion, man. He is making college football so fun. His teams now are slightly competitive. They're beating other teams in big conferences. And Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders are must-watch TV. I mean, I love, people can knock him all they want. I won't. I find what he's doing is great for college football. And I think they can win some games in the Big 12. I think I hope they can win 7 games this year. Go 7-5. You make a bowl game. What more can you ask for? And if you do that, then more people might come to Colorado. Be like, damn, Deion's got something going here. I want to play for Coach Prime. Yeah, the other big storylines in college football, Tennessee beating Oklahoma. Those Oklahoma quarterbacks were awful. Their defense. When's the last time Oklahoma relied on their defense? What, Brian Bosworth era? Like, I'm serious. Oklahoma was known for Lincoln Riley, Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks, will score 60 a game, give up 55, will win a thriller. If they had just any offense over the weekend, they probably beat Tennessee. Their defense handed the ball over to them several times. Forced turnover, and Oklahoma would give it right back. It was a tough watch. Really was. Big game this weekend with Georgia and Alabama. I cannot wait for that. That's going to be unbelievable on Saturday night. I've had that game circled on the calendar for a long time. Very long time. And we're getting it Saturday. 7 o'clock on ABC or 7:30 on ABC. Can't wait. I want to just briefly touch on that Sunday night game last night. The Atlanta Falcons, good Lord. It's just, they are very talented. They're well on their way to being a playoff team, I think. You just look at the talent on offense, defense. Kirk Cousins was slightly getting better towards the end of the game. But man, did they let that game slip away. They had the 2-time defending Super Bowl champions on the ropes, reeling, and they let them off the hook twice. Now, albeit we can talk about the Kyle Pitts pass interference non-call all day long. I think it was McDuffie or what was all over him. We're literally hugging him in the end zone. They don't throw a flag. And if they get the ball at the 1 yard line, you know, you hand it to Bijan four times, you like to think he'll get it. True. But the decision not to kick the field goal on fourth down twice is crazy. They got lucky the first time. They completed it to Drake London. Okay, the drive moves. But then once they have the no call in the end zone, they kind of felt like, damn, we're going to get it back. No. Reevaluate, reassess, kick the field goal. You're down five. If they kick the field goal there, it's 22-20 Kansas City. You punt the ball off to Kansas City. They went three and out. You get the ball back. And now on that final drive when it was fourth and inches, a field goal there gives you the lead with, 40 seconds left? And obviously Mahomes can go down the field. But it made no sense. I know analytics is becoming a huge part of the game now. Teams are going for it more often. Teams want to pressure, push the envelope. Let's keep the ball. We want to go for touchdowns. But my favorite saying sometimes in the NFL and in college or any level of football is take the points. Take the points. The amount of times I've seen a team I'm rooting for trying to play catch up towards the end of a game and you're in a position and you think, damn, what I would do for those 3 points right now, or what I do for those 6 points. Maybe they went for twice and didn't get it and could have kicked field goals. You don't know. Whatever. Those points come back to bite you. And it bit Atlanta in the butt yesterday, big time. You had a 4th and 2, was it? And I know you completed one, four plays earlier. But you got to read the room. There's still 5 minutes left in the game. There's 5 minutes left in the game. Kick the field goal. Your defense has been shutting them down the whole game. You held the Chiefs to 22 points. And your pass rush, Judon was getting home. A.J. Terrell was playing great. Simmons picked off Mahomes. The defense was playing very well for Atlanta. Gave him several chances in that game. And they did again. They forced the Chiefs to punt. Then, when Kirk Cousins and the Falcons were driving down the field with 2 minutes left, down five, they could have been down two. And what could they have done instead of passing the ball? They could have ran the ball more with Bijan once they got in field goal range. Bleed the Chiefs timeouts. Kick a field goal to take the lead with, 25, 30 seconds left? There was a lot of things that went wrong for Kansas City yesterday. I mean, once they score the touchdown to go up 8, Butker misses the extra point and it's a 1-score game. That happened. Not to mention, some of the calls on the last drive against Kansas City, not good. The hands to the face, didn't think that was hands to the face. But they get so many damn breaks. It's crazy. It's like they'll have the kick. Like yesterday, Butker never misses an extra point. Missed an extra point. That happens. People complaining, oh, hands to the face. It wasn't hands in the face. It should have been third down against Atlanta. That non-call, pass interference, is one of the most blatant non-calls I've ever seen. He's literally wrapped. He's hugging him. He's hugging Kyle Pitts in the back of the end zone. Hugging him. They don't call it. There was a lot of big breaks for Kansas City. And what I will say is, they're going to be there in the end. But Kelce looks old. Xavier Worthy hasn't done anything really yet. Mahomes hasn't looked himself. And I know I'm saying this in September. And November, December, they're going to be firing on all cylinders. I know that. But if you're a team like Atlanta, who has a joke of a schedule at the end of the year, if you can pick off a win against Kansas City week 3 at home and be 2-1 with wins over Philly and Kansas City, be crazy. I think Atlanta is going to be in the hunt, no doubt. They're too talented not to be. I think Kirk Cousins is only going to get better with the Achilles injury. He's just confidence. Like we've seen, I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Rodgers each week's looking better. Kirk, week 1 looked awful against Pittsburgh. Week 2, awful in the first half. And then in the fourth quarter, he looked better. This week, he looked better. But they had chances, man. If you kick the field goal with 5 minutes left, you're only down two. And then you have Young Wei-Koo go out again and kick a field goal to win the game or put you up with 25 seconds left. You take it. And if Mahomes leaves you, if you leave too much time, Mahomes goes down the field, they kick a game-winning field goal, so be it. And also the play call on fourth and inches. You need an inch. Jet sweep to the left. Not even. It was just a run. I don't know what it was. They run diagonal. And the Chiefs know what it is. Sniff it out. They lost like 3 yards on the play. It was a joke of a play call. Run north-south. You need an inch. Just run. Bring in the fullbacks. Bring in the tight ends. Bring whoever. Go jumbo. And push Kirk Cousins an inch for a first down. Or you give it to Bijan Robinson, run it up the middle. Or pass it. If that's your play call, give me a break. Fourth and inches. I also hate the runs from the gun. I cannot stand them. The amount of times they're in the gun, there's just a handoff to the running back. I hate that. He has no steam going to the offensive line, no momentum. Just line him up under center. At least he runs towards the ball and has steam when he hits the gap. It's crazy. I could not believe in that second to last drive, too, where they had the Kyle Pitts no call. That was such a well-called drive play-calling-wise. I don't know what happened and once they hit the red zone. Just went out the window, I guess. But just the two biggest plays of the game were those two fourth downs. It's either you have a play call you love that is going to work, or you take the points. They did not seem confident on that last play at all. Let's go Bijan, run to the left, and hopefully he breaks a tackle and gets an inch. What? And Kansas City, I mean, they knew Bijan was getting the ball. I mean, Kirk Cousins is coming off an Achilles injury. He ain't getting a threat to run. He's the only guy in the backfield. We're just going to run wherever Bijan's at. Brutal play call. I don't care if he has a torn, coming off a torn Achilles. To push him an inch. Get Kyle Pitts in the backfield. Get Bijan. Get them all. Get two defensive linemen. Just push Kirk an inch to move the sticks. An inch. Crazy. Those are the two big plays. The fourth and two, I think it was. They went for it. Didn't get it. And the fourth and inches, obviously. But if they take the two field goals there, we would be sitting here on a Monday morning. The Falcons are 2-1 with wins against Philly and Kansas City. I'm just saying. And I like Raheem Morris, and I like the Falcons, but I think they're going to be a factor. But still, it's just awful. I mean, just at the end, take the points. Just don't be cute. Don't listen to analytics for once in your damn life. Take the damn points, please, for the love of God. And I hate that people say, oh, why are you playing so conservative? Tommy, that's such a conservative attitude. I don't know. What do you mean take the points? Analytics. I'm done with analytics for a bit. Brandon Staley believed in analytics. Dan Campbell, the NFC Championship game last year, believed in analytics. Where'd that get him? Sometimes don't mess around. Just take the points. It's like they want to brag about how great of a coach they are, how bold of a coach I am. No, sometimes you just got to be smart. Read the situation. If you kick the field goal on fourth and two, you're down two for the 100th time. You're down two. Then when you're driving, you can call that drive differently. You can run the ball more, force Kansas City to eat its timeouts, take it under the two-minute warning, run the ball again, bleed the clock down to 10 seconds or so, kick a game-winning field goal, get out of there with the win on Arthur Blank night. That's what they should have done. They didn't. They were foolish. They believed in analytics for no damn reason. I mean, it's ridiculous. Atlanta should be 2-1 right now and one of the favorites in the NFC if they win that game last night. Instead, we're talking about the same old damn Falcons. Ridiculous. We're going to get one quick break and we come back. We're going to preview next week's games in the NFL as well as talk about the President's Cup. I am Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
The International Projection Mapping Festival, Map MTL, returns for its 9th edition from September 24th to 28th. Don't miss their flagship event, the Digital Block Party, from September 26th to 28th at Skate Park Van Horn. On the program, mapping projections, electronic music performances with Shift Radio, food stalls, creative workshops, all in a neighborhood party atmosphere. Reserve your free tickets on mapmtl.com.
If you enjoy genres like slowcore, post-hardcore, noise rock, math rock, shoegaze, or anything like that, tune into Past Tense 9 p.m. Thursdays on CJLO. It also airs 9 p.m. Mondays on luradio.ca and 9 p.m. Wednesdays on cfrc.ca.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. I still can't get over the play calling. I still can't get over it. Also, yes, that pass interference was brutal, but that was third down. That was third down. Wasn't fourth down. Not like, oh, they had the play and they interfered, didn't throw the flag. That was third down. They still had the ball after that. You still had the ball. Crazy. I still like Atlanta. I think they're going to be a factor. New Orleans, I love the first 2 weeks. I mean, that was a bad loss yesterday. Philly's a good team. But Derek Carr did not look well yesterday. He did not play well at all. That's a big game next week. Atlanta and New Orleans. We'll see how they respond, Atlanta. But yeah, that division's much better than I thought. Tampa Bay's a factor. I know they didn't look good yesterday against Denver. And Carolina, I mean, who knew Andy Dalton slinging the ball all over the place? It was sensational. Sensational. We really need to mention one thing before we go here. We got a huge game tonight for Jacksonville. Huge. And the reason I'm mentioning Jacksonville is if they lose this game, they are in deep, deep trouble. And it's not an easy one. You're at Buffalo. Buffalo's favored by, I think, close to a touchdown. And your schedule coming up, not that friendly. You blew the game against the Browns. You should win that game 9 times out of 10. You lose week one to Miami, which is inexcusable when Etienne fumbled the ball through the end zone. Now, you got Buffalo. You're at Houston next week. Indy. Then you have Chicago, New England. Then you got Green Bay, Philly, Minnesota, Detroit, Houston. That is a brutal stretch. And you're already 0-2. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 5 brutal games in a row. Let's say you have a bad stretch. You lose to Minnesota. You lose to Philly. You lose to Houston. Lose to. Let's say you go 1-4 in that stretch. We're going worst case scenario. You beat the Packers. Okay. 1-4. Right now, too, you're working at 11-6. Still good. Great. You lose tonight. It's 10-7. And if you lose all 5 of those games, because all 5 of those teams are better than you. Houston's better than you. Detroit's better than you. Minnesota's better than you. Philadelphia's better than you. The Packers are damn better than you. If you lose tonight and all those games, you're at 9-8. And that usually does not get you into the postseason. Now, I don't know what's gone wrong. Trevor Lawrence is one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league. They have Etienne. They have Brian Thomas Jr., the rookie. They have Christian Kirk. They have Gabe Davis. They have weapons. Evan Ingram. They have weapons all over the place. And I don't know what the hell's happened with Jacksonville, but it's ridiculous. How many times can the offense not show up? And last year, they were 8-3, cruising at the top. Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, and they weren't the same. But now Trevor Lawrence is 100% healthy. He looked great in the preseason. People were loving the Jaguars. This is one of the biggest games in the Trevor Lawrence, Doug Peterson era. If they lose this game tonight, they're 0-3 with Houston coming up. And in that brutal stretch in late October to mid-November of 5 weeks, they could be down and out. I hope I'm wrong. I like Trevor Lawrence. I like Doug Peterson. He's a Super Bowl winning coach. But this is a huge game for Jacksonville tonight. Buffalo less so. You're 2-0. You surprise some people. You'd like to win at home and go to 3-0 and prove your worth. Say, hey, we're still the top dogs in the East. But there's more. You know Buffalo's going to be all right. Jacksonville, this is it, man. They better play their tails off tonight. Because if they win, they're 1-2 with a big win at Buffalo. And then you look up, okay, we get through Houston. If we beat Buffalo, we can beat Houston. And then you think, oh, Indianapolis will win, Bears will win, Patriots will win. And then you go into that stretch. Let's say you're 5-3 or something like that. It's a different animal. But they lose tonight 0-3. I mean, people might start listening. They see that schedule, becomes overwhelming, start toning the coach out. It could get bad in Jacksonville. This is a monumental game for the Jaguars. Like season defining. We're week three, but you should be 2-0 right now, and you're 0-2. If you go to 0-3 with that schedule coming up, it could be a disaster. It really could. President's Cup over the weekend here in Montreal. I cannot wait for that. We also had Laver Cup last weekend. Shout out to Team Europe winning over I believe it was in Berlin. Yeah, good job to them. But the President's Cup, man, it's going to be a lot of fun. I want to go out this week, see the practice rounds. I cannot wait. I mean, Scotty Scheffler and Colin Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, all the best. Now, would I like some of the LIV guys to be there? I would, because it would give the internationals more of a chance. You get Cameron Smith, you get Joachim Niemann, you get guys of that caliber on the international team. We have more of a chance. I mean, I'd like to think DeChambeau and Koepka would be on the U.S. team. But this is a big, big, big tournament for the international golf. If they can make it competitive, then people, like, nothing against the President's Cup, but the Ryder Cup people love. It's competitive. People care about the Ryder Cup because it goes back and forth, and recently Europe's gotten the better of the U.S. The internationals just never stand a chance. They get destroyed. It's usually like 18 to 11.5 is usually this one. You're like, what the hell happened? I've played Royal Montreal before. I know the course. There should be a lot of birdies out there, but on that back nine, the last few holes, I mean, 10, there's water. 14, there's water. 15, 16, 17, 18, the closing strolls, there's all water. And in match play, when it's coming down to it, that could be the difference. So it should be fireworks once they get to the back nine. The front nine, just to be okay, let's get myself some shots here in case things blow up on the back. And you can get a 10 on a hole in match play and just pick up your ball. I'm only down one. It's not stroke play. One hole doesn't determine everything. But I cannot wait. Should be great. Looking for fireworks. Tonight, I think Buffalo gets it done. I think Jacksonville will play tough. They know it's going to be their biggest game of the year thus far. But just that run attack by Buffalo has been so lethal. I'll take the Bills and Josh Allen. And then I'll take Cincinnati over Washington. Washington's not that good. Daniels has shown signs, but man, Burrow played really well last week. And T. Higgins supposedly back. They're at home. They need this game. Can't go to 0-3. They win this game, they're 1-2 with Carolina coming into town. Should be 2-2. Give me Cincinnati. I'll take the Bengals. Thank you guys for listening over this past hour. We're back next Monday at 1 p.m., not 2. 1 p.m. is our new time here on CGLO, 1690 a.m. I want to thank you guys for listening, and we will speak next week. Enjoy all the sports, and we will see you next Monday, 1 p.m. Thank you.
Hi, this